Reading an article now from the This World magazine from January 25th, 1987. For people who eventually will hear this outside of the Bay Area, This World is a magazine included in the Sunday San Francisco Examiner and Chronicle. This is an article by Peter Moss, the author of a book called Manhunt, which we're going to deal with briefly later in the broadcast. It's headlined, The Edwin Wilson Connection, or entitled, The Edwin Wilson Connection, subheaded, Four key players in the Iranagua scandal are linked to the former CIA agent, now in prison for shipping arms and explosives to Libya. I would underscore that a lot more than four people are connected. There are four major ones that he's going to talk about here. As we're going to see later, many more people are in fact, many more players in the Iran-Contra scandal are in fact members of the Turple Wilson team. And again, the author is Peter Moss, MAAS. As someone who has spent a good deal of his life as an investigative writer, I like to think that there's not much left to surprise me. But of all the bizarre events swirling around the sales of arms to Iran and the alleged diversion of profits to aid the Nicaraguan Contras, nothing is more bizarre or more dumbfounding to me than that in the welter of household names dragged into the scandal, there are to be found four key players, previously unknown to the public, whose identities I had come to know quite well. They are Richard V. Secord, Thomas G. Clines, Theodore G. Shackley, and Albert Hakim. In media accounts thus far, Hakim has most often been described as an Iranian-born, naturalized American businessman in Silicon Valley. Secord, as a retired Air Force Major General, and Clines and Shackley as retired high officials of the Central Intelligence Agency. While these characterizations are correct as far as they go, the retirements of Secord, Shackley, and Clines from government service were not quite so cut and dried as they sound, and to portray Hakim as a mere businessman hardly does him justice. These men shared a very special bond. All had intimate links to Edwin P. Wilson, the rogue CIA operative who wound up secretly supplying Libya's Colonel Muammar Gaddafi with a terrorist capability that included training by former U.S. Special Forces personnel, arms of every description, and tons of the most powerful plastic explosive in the world. It was in researching Manhunt, my book about Wilson, that I first came across his association with Secord, Hakim, Clines, and Shackley, an association these men shared one way or another in the Iran-Contra deal with Oliver L. North, the Marine Lieutenant Colonel relieved of his post on the National Security Council when the scandal broke. North's operation, like Wilson's, featured the mysterious passage of funds through Swiss banks and myriad corporate shells. How was it that North came to pick people like Secord and the others in the first place to participate in a scheme that threatened to cripple the Reagan administration in its remaining years, especially one that involved large amounts of secret money? Even the most cursory examination by North would have shown that these four men had pasts clouded by suspect behavior and some outright felonious malfeasance. I'll interject with a sarcastic note, that's probably just why he recruited them. Continuing with Moss's account, that perhaps in poor taste is obviously my own addition. And this raises another disturbing question. Has the traditionally elitist old boy network of continuing relationships we always hear about in the murky world of covert doings been replaced by new boys on the block with quite a different agenda? The origins of this cabal go back many years to CIA cowboy operations against Cuba in the early 1960s, then in Southeast Asia, and subsequently in the Middle East. Tangled though all these relationships appear to be at first glance, there is always one connecting thread, Edwin Wilson. Once in custody, Wilson was tried four times for various offenses. He is now serving a 52-year sentence for making arms and explosive shipments to Libya, as well as for attempted murder. One of these trials took place in Houston, where he was charged with masterminding the delivery of almost 43,000 pounds of plastic explosive to Gaddafi. In a fruitless effort to establish that Wilson was actually working undercover in Libya to provide the CIA with intelligence, Secord, in a little-noticed appearance on February 3, 1983, was called as a defense witness. Ramrod stiff in manner, he described himself as an Air Force officer then serving in the Pentagon as Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for the Near East and South Asia. Question, General Secord, when did you first meet Mr. Wilson? Answer, over 10 years ago, about 1971. Question, who introduced you to Mr. Wilson? Answer, Tom Clines, an officer in the CIA. Clines has been identified as having worked closely with Secord and North on the Nicaraguan end of the Iranian arms sales. Clines joined the CIA in May of 1949 at the age of 19. Immediately following the Bay of Pigs fiasco in 1961, he was to be found at the CIA station in Miami running anti-Castro Cubans on sabotage and assassination missions. During the next phase of his CIA career, Clines became Wilson's case officer. Among his duties was to rate Wilson's performance, and the high marks Wilson got from him helped bring about some rapid promotions. As it happened, Clines, who enjoyed a reputation for being a man about town in Washington, was often short of money, and Wilson helped out with cash loans that, according to Wilson, eventually amounted to about $60,000. As a witness in Wilson's Houston trial in 1983, Secord was also asked if he knew a man named Theodore G. Shackley. He answered in the affirmative. Do you know what official position Shackley held? Answer. I knew he was an official, a senior official in the CIA. Question. Have you ever seen Mr. Shackley in the presence of Mr. Wilson on a number of occasions? Answer. On a few occasions. In 1984, in one of the earliest stages of the current Iranian arms mess, Shackley met in West Germany with an Iranian middleman named Manuchehr Gorbanifar about the possibility of ransoming the American hostages being held in Lebanon. Shackley, 59, was the agency's chief of station in Miami when Shackley was there. Their relationship continued after Shackley became the station chief in Laos and Clines joined him in the late 1960s. According to federal investigative records, this was when they first encountered Secord. Secord was then a veteran combat pilot who was flying spotter missions in the CIA's ultimately unsuccessful secret war in Laos against communist guerrilla forces, a war in which Wilson showed up providing logistical support. I would interrupt the article here, recalling Radio Free America number 4. Wilson, one of his major assignments, was as the paymaster for the Bay of Pigs. So remember Edwin Wilson's Bay of Pigs connections here. By the way, broadcasting from Foothill College, this is KFJC Los Altos Hills. But again, remember that Edwin Wilson, too, goes all the way back to the Bay of Pigs team. He's been on this very same anti-Castro team, which evolved over the years into the Triple Wilson team that we're studying right now. In the early 1970s, Clines, Shackley, and Secord were back in Washington from Southeast Asia, where they were seen together and separately at a palatial estate Wilson had acquired in the Northern Virginia hunt country. By 1976, Shackley had become the number two man in the CIA's clandestine directorate. Clines was director of training and, on the side, dabbled in real estate. Secord, having just gotten his first star, was in Iran heading up the Air Force's Military Assistance Advisory Group to the Shah. Traveling in and out of Tehran at that time was Albert Hakim. Hakim had a company in Silicon Valley that brokered the sale of sophisticated electronic equipment to the Shah's secret police and Air Force. Wilson was also frequently in Tehran, competing with Hakim for contracts. Both would often touch base with Secord. But then Wilson forgot about Iran. He hit a motherlode in Gaddafi's Libya. To fulfill his Libyan contracts, Wilson paid two middle-level CIA employees to help him obtain miniaturized timing devices to set off bombs and to recruit former Green Berets to train Libyan terrorists. In 1977, when President Carter's new director of Central Intelligence, Admiral Stansfield Turner, discovered this, he dismissed both agency men. Turner also discovered the close association that Wilson had maintained for so long with Shackley and Clines. But since there were no criminal charges then pending against Wilson, Turner explained to me, the best he could do was shift Shackley and Clines to jobs that effectively sidetracked their advancement in the agency. Skipping down in the article, by early 1979, Clines had officially left CIA employ. According to records I obtained in Switzerland, he arrived in Geneva to meet with Wilson's lawyer to conclude an arrangement whereby Wilson advanced him $500,000. The movement of this money is strikingly similar to the kind of tortuous path that profits from the Iranian arms sales appear to have taken. First, it went from one of Wilson's secret Swiss bank accounts to an offshore Bermuda corporation that had five equal shareholders. Four of these shareholders were anonymous Americans. The fifth was a foreign company that, in fact, was Wilson. The money next flowed to a concern registered in Delaware that had Clines as president. Shackley, who by then had given up any hope of resurrecting his CIA career and was out of the agency, was listed as a consultant. The Delaware concern then became a 49% partner in still another company called the Egyptian American Transport and Services Corporation, EATSCO for short, which had an exclusive contract for the Pentagon with the Pentagon to ship billions of dollars in arms to Cairo following the Camp David peace accords between Egypt and Israel. According to Wilson, his unnamed partners in these ventures were Secord, Kleins, Shackley, and a fourth man, Eric von Marbod, that's V-O-N-M-A-R-B-O-D, then deputy director of the Pentagon's Defense Security Assistance Agency, who recommended approval of the Eatsco contract and who often had been seen at Wilson's Virginia estate. All the men cited by Wilson as his silent partners in the Eatsco affair denied his allegations, and there was no definitive paper trail. Skipping down once again, at about that time, Wilson was starting to receive headline treatment as a fugitive holed up in Libya, the result of years of effort by a dedicated young assistant U.S. attorney in Washington, E. Lawrence Barchella, Jr., who had finally gotten a multiple-count indictment against him. Then there were new allegations concerning Eatsco. In early 1962, the U.S. Maritime Administration uncovered evidence of massive billing abuses by Eatsco to the Pentagon. Since it involved Wilson, Barchella launched a follow-up investigation. One night, he received a visit from a man named Michael A. Ledeen, then a special assistant on terrorism at the State Department, who suggested to Barchella that any alleged billing abuses might have gone for a covert operation. Ledeen has now been identified as an important White House emissary in the Iran arms deal, especially in regard to Israel's role during the transfer of weapons for hostages. Remember Michael Ledeen, we're going to come back to him later. Skipping down once again in the article, and the shadowy Hakim, who once employed another notorious Wilson associate named Frank Turple, currently a fugitive from justice on gun-running charges, was said to have been instrumental in arranging Swiss bank accounts through which profits from the Iranian arms sales theoretically went to the Contras. But suddenly, Contra leaders were saying they hadn't seen much of it. And Attorney General Edwin Meese said that although the money was supposed to go to the Contras, he had no conclusive proof that, in fact, it had. So there are a lot of things that were in there that we're going to be coming back to, but the point that we're making here is that the Iran-Contra team is, in fact, the Ed Wilson team, and the importance of this current scandal is one of the reasons why we've been harping on them so long over the years. As we've talked about in connection with the Turple-Wilson team, well, the major focus of their activity apparently has been not only terrorism, but specifically provocations, the setting up of terrorist incidents to be blamed on one's opponent and in turn to serve as a pretext for action on one's own part. And we're going to be taking a look at the application of the Wilson provocation doctrine in Central America, specifically the La Penca bombing and a proposed assassination of Louis Tams later in the program.
One of the things that also that we're going to be talking about right now is a gentleman whose name was just mentioned in the last article as one of the associates, as Dave mentioned as if they were the only four associates, in fact, that that Ed Wilson had that were connected with the Contragate scandal. And, of course, there was a great deal more than that connected. But anyway, a man by the name of Albert Hakim, who's also one of our local interests, living as he did, I don't know where he's living now, living as he did in Los Gatos, right here in the San Francisco Bay Area, from which these broadcasts originate. The article we're going to read is from the San Jose Mercury News for July 18, 1986. The headline is Los Gatos Mystery Man in Spotlight. The article is by Pete Carey, a Mercury News staff writer. A Silicon Valley businessman whose home sits atop one of the highest hills in Los Gatos has been named in a civil suit alleging that he and several retired CIA and Defense Department officials conspired to arm a faction of the Contra forces fighting Nicaragua's Sandinista government. Albert Hakim, an Iranian-born U.S. citizen, insists the suit is without merit. But the court action could throw an unwelcome spotlight on the 51-year-old entrepreneur, who has figured peripherally in a few of the past decade's more mysterious intelligence-related affairs. Hakim's business activities... excuse me. Hakim's business activities have included building an electronic security system for a South Korean nuclear power plant, selling a telephone monitoring system to the Shah of Iran, and opening several delicatessens in San Jose. Hakim also financed and later took over a high-tech security company that once marketed sophisticated electronic monitoring equipment in Latin America and South Korea, and, through a subsidiary of another company, employed a former CIA agent, Frank Turple, now a federal fugitive. The $23.8 million suit against 30 defendants was filed May 29th in federal district court in Miami. It alleges that Hakim and several retired CIA and Defense Department officials conspired to arm and equip a faction of the Contra forces fighting Nicaragua's Sandinista government from 1983 to 1986. Skipping down in the article, freelance writers Tony Avergan and Martha Honey, a couple from New York who filed the lawsuit, both attended the news conference. Avergan was among more than 25 injured in the bombing, although Pastora was not badly hurt, meaning Aiden Pastora, otherwise known as Comandante Cero. Eight others were killed. One of the five others named as having supplied the Contras, Theodore Shackley, a retired associate deputy chief of plans for the CIA who once worked for Hakim, said the suit is without merit. He said he knows and has worked for Hakim in the past and knows several others named in the suit, but has never helped arm or supply Contra forces. In a telephone interview, Hakim called the allegations, quote, totally inaccurate. Quote, "It has been many years since I stopped using the services of Ted Shackley," he said. "I stopped using him. He was a consultant to my company until 4 or 5 years ago. Since then, I have had no business connection with Shackley. My opinion is that we are simply good targets for such people to attack. I sincerely believe it is a political lawsuit. Since they cannot get to the administration, they use the people who cannot defend themselves. That is my analysis," unquote. Daniel P. Sheehan, who represents Avergan and Honey, admits his suit is intended to change public policy. Quote, "We've made clear to our clients that this isn't information we are gathering for their financial benefit. It's to solve a public policy problem," he said. Sheehan operates the Christic Institute, an interfaith law firm that files public interest lawsuits. Sheehan said that some of his information on Hakim comes from Edwin Wilson, another retired CIA agent now serving a lengthy prison term for training Libyan terrorists. Other information comes from, quote, sources Sheehan would not identify. Hakim said he believes he was named in the suit because of publicity about his firm's brief involvement with Terpel and Wilson. At the center of Hakim's activities is Stanford Technology Corporation, which he incorporated in Delaware in 1974. In Silicon Valley, the firm bought a company called International Imaging Systems, which made a computerized image processing system that enhances photographs of the Earth taken from high altitudes. During the 1970s, according to published reports, Stanford Technology made a computerized telephone monitoring service that it sold to the Shah of Iran's intelligence agency, SAVAK, apparently so the Shah could check up on his military commander's activities. And, in a move that later brought it unwelcome publicity, the company, through a Washington, D.C. subsidiary, also hired former CIA agent Terpel. According to Hakim, Terpel and his crony Wilson did a number of things without Hakim's knowledge or approval. Wilson and Terpel used Hakim's Swiss company, Stanford Technology S.A., to equip a computer center for the Libyan government of Colonel Muammar Gaddafi, according to published sources. Hakim says he dismissed Terpel when he found out what was going on and later helped in the federal prosecution of Wilson. When Hakim sold International Imaging, he retained the name Stanford Technology Corporation and reincorporated it in California for future business ventures. He recently moved the firm to San Francisco. Bernard Siner, one of Hakim's attorneys, describes the company's business as, quote, what is called remote supervision or surveillance equipment to protect things like energy plants or Air Force bases from sabotage or invasion, unquote. Hakim also joined with Richard Secord, a retired Air Force general, in Stanford Technology Trading Group, a Vienna, Virginia trading company. Secord is also named in the lawsuit, but could not be reached for comment.
So, the Terpel Wilson team, the association of all of these individuals with Terpel and Wilson, and in particular, the use of Frank Terpel as an employee in Stanford Technology is something to be borne in mind here. Perhaps the single most important name in that particular article was that of International Imaging Systems. Remember that name? It's one that's going to have great significance here for the Silicon Valley. And the reason is that International Imaging Systems is a company that connects the Albert Hakim Stanford Technology Company, involved not only with the Terpel Wilson operation in Libya, but obviously also with the other members of the Terpel Wilson team involved in the Iran-Contra scandal. It connects them to a company called TCI. That is an electronics company in the right here in the Silicon or Santa Clara Valley, which was headed by a man named Otto von Bolschwing. Now, we dealt with Otto von Bolschwing in Radio Free America number 3, and we're going to review some of that material right now. Otto von Bolschwing was an SS man, a participant in Hitler's Final Solution, and a man who went on to become a key Galen operative, specifically, according to one source, the head of Galen's North American operation. Reading now from the San Jose Mercury of November 20th of 1981. This is an article also by Pete Carey, the same fellow who wrote that other article. They had the one Nip just read you, and it's headlined, Ex-Nazi's Brilliant U.S. Career Strangled in a Web of Lies. For the past 10 years, Otto Albrecht Alfred von Bolschwing's carefully constructed life in America has been coming apart a piece at a time. He was president of a high-technology investment firm with headquarters in Sacramento Valley and subsidiaries in the Silicon Valley. It went bankrupt in a 1971 scandal. He was a doting husband until his ailing wife killed herself in 1978. He numbered among his business associates bankers and scientists. Millionaires, bankers, and scientists. Then his brainstem was hit by a rare disease 2 years ago, sending him into isolation at a Carmichael rest home. He told friends he had worked for the Americans during and after World War II. But in May, the federal government began proceedings to deport him for lying about his Nazi past. In a widely publicized attempt to revoke von Bolschwing's citizenship, the Justice Department accused him of helping Hitler's persecution of European Jews and of being an associate of Adolf Eichmann, the architect of Germany's mass killing program. The disclosures come at the end of a long, improbable career that took von Bolschwing through the Nazi hierarchy, into the CIA, and finally to the highest levels of American business. The list of people he knew, some of whom met him through a California high technology business venture in 1970, reads like a who's who. They include Justice William A. Newsom of the First District Court of Appeals in San Francisco, Helena von Damm, V-O-N-D-A-M-M, President Reagan's personal secretary, Thomas A. Fonzioli, banker to the Boston Cabot family, Emmanuel Fanakis, Fairchild Corporation senior vice president, Elmer Bobst, or Bobst, B-O-B-S-T, president of Warner Lambert Pharmaceutical Company, and Alfred Driscoll, former New Jersey governor and Warner Lambert's chairman. I'm nonplussed, Justice Newsom said. I thought, if anything, Otto had been pro-American during the war. As a businessman, von Bolschwing was vague about the war years. He said he had been a Gestapo prisoner and had worked for the CIA in post-war Germany. In 1969, he was asked about his German past during a job interview with Trans International Computer Investment Corporation, a high-flying investment firm that had founded several companies in the Silicon Valley. Von Bolschwing told his interviewer that he had been a lawyer. Skipping down in the article, who was this ex-Nazi and how did he prosper in America? Von Bolschwing's attorney would not allow an interview. This account was developed from people who knew him, accounts of Nazi Germany, court records, and business files. Born October 15, 1909, to East Prussian nobility, the family estate was founded in 1302, von Bolschwing attended school in Breslau and became a Nazi Party member at the age of 24, the only member of his family to do so. He joined the SS, the elite secret police of the Nazis, 6 years later. According to the Justice Department, as an SS captain, he helped plan the exclusion of Jews from the German economy and developed anti-Jewish propaganda to force their emigration from Germany. In a history of the SS by Heinz Hoene, von Bolschwing is described as, quote, a party member, an SD, foreign intelligence informer, and an experienced salesman in the motor trade, unquote. In 1938, again quoting Hoene, he was in contact with a group of Palestinian Germans who lined their pockets by certain extramural intelligence activities, according to Hoene, who wrote that von Bolschwing spied on the Zionist Haganah Army. Ejected from Palestine by the British for espionage, he surfaced in Romania as a government oil expert, unquote. By his own account, in 1941 he helped the leadership of the Iron Guard, a right-wing movement, escape to Berlin after it had gone on a three-day rampage in which many Jews, the estimates vary considerably, brutally were killed. The same year, he became a partner in the Amsterdam Bank, the Bank voor Onirande Zaken. Investigators said they suspect the bank may have played a role in the Aryanization, the forced sale, of Dutch Jewish farms, businesses, homes, and securities. In August of 1941, von Bolschwing was tossed into a Gestapo prison with no formal charges, and in April 42, he was just as mysteriously released. In 1945, he helped American troops entering Austria catch Nazi officials and SS officers, according to a letter written for von Bolschwing by a colonel in the 71st U.S. Infantry. The war over, von Bolschwing made a move crucial to his... The war over, von Bolschwing made a move crucial to his future success. He became an American spy. Quote, he knocked on the door of U.S. Army intelligence, a source explained, and said, I'm experienced, I have a ring operating. If you give me a paycheck, I'll make you very happy. He was sort of a miniature Reinhard Galen. Galen was the Nazi general who helped the CIA build a spy network in post-war Europe. Galen was the Nazi general who helped the CIA build a spy network in post-war Eastern Europe, then became head of post-war German intelligence activities. According to one unconfirmed report, von Bolschwing became the controller of Galen's CIA operation after Galen returned to German government. He must have done something right, the source said. In December of 1953, von Bolschwing applied to immigrate to the United States, and on February 2, 1954, he arrived in this country. After obtaining several menial jobs, he became a citizen in 1959 when his career took a sudden upward turn. He became an assistant to the director of international marketing at Warner Lambert Pharmaceutical Company, developing close ties to the company's president, the late Elmer Bobst, and its honorary board chairman, former New Jersey Governor Alfred Driscoll, according to a close associate. His contacts at Warner Lambert were way out of proportion with his job, the associate said. Driscoll continued to write him recommendations for many years. By the mid-60s, von Bolschwing had become an executive with Cabot Manufacturing. As chief financial officer for its German subsidiary, he developed a $50 million carbon black factory for Cabot in Germany. The deal was financed through Thomas Franzioli, senior vice president of the First National Bank of Boston. Franzioli recalls that von Bolschwing then branched out on his own. He was starting a business importing wine from Argentina, Franzioli recalled. I don't know if it ever got off the ground. This is the most important single part of the article here. In March of 1969, von Bolschwing got a job in high technology. He was retained as an international business consultant by TCI, the Sacramento firm. The company planned to commercialize on technology developed in the Silicon Valley and used a few years earlier to monitor troop movements in the 1967 Arab-Israeli War, according to the firm's founder, Oswald S. Williams. TCI's subsidiaries in Palo Alto and Mountain View, Advanced Information Systems and International Imaging Systems, recall that's the company Hakim purchased, were developing a high-volume computer network for business and a navigation system for oil tankers using satellite communications, Williams said. Skipping down into the article, records and interviews with TCI officials indicate, fill in one more point. TCI's high-powered directors, one was J. Paul Getty Jr., son of the oil billionaire, thought enough of von Bolschwing to make him the firm's president in 1970. He seemed like a very polite and cultured person, said Walter F. Leverton, former vice president for satellite systems of the Aerospace Corporation. Leverton sat on the board of TCI. Skipping down, records and interviews with TCI officials indicate that Helena von Damm, President Reagan's Austrian-born deputy assistant, translated some German contracts for TCI and invested $1,000 in it while she was then Governor Reagan's secretary in Sacramento. Von Damm was too busy, unquote, to talk about von Bolschwing, but through her White House secretary, she said she knew him socially, unquote, in Sacramento many years ago. In 1970, TCI ran into trouble with the Department of Corporations. Several major stockholders were syndicating their stock, selling it to small investors in Sacramento. It was the hottest thing in town, recalled Brian Van Camp, now a private attorney, but then the commissioner of corporations. The trading was found to be illegal under a 1968 law requiring security sales to be registered. The Department of Corporations suspended trading in TCI stock, and in 1972, the Sacramento District Attorney's Office prosecuted several stockholders, calling it, quote, possibly the biggest stock fraud in California history. So the important parts of this is to remember von Bolschwing's role as quite possibly the head of Galen's North American operation. Of course, we've looked at the Galen organization many, many times, and also in particular to remember the fact that International Imaging Systems was one of TCI's subsidiaries, one of TCI's employees, and a social contact of von Bolschwing was Helena von Damm. Niptuck's going to read you about Helena von Damm, and then we'll come back and we'll talk a little more about some of the significance of some of these connections, because this may appear to some people to be a little bit off the track. We're going to tie that back in here in just a sec.
Oh, yes. These things may seem off the track, but as the entire Contragate hearings, the Contragate scandal has proved, this stuff that Dave and I have been talking about for the last few years is as current as today's paper. This is one of yesterday's papers, actually many yesterdays ago. This is from the San Francisco Chronicle for Tuesday, August 3rd, 1982. The headline is Big Promotion for Reagan's Ex-Secretary, and it goes like this. President Reagan announced yesterday in Des Moines that he will promote Helena Von Dahm to the position of Assistant to the President for Presidential Personnel. She will replace E. Pendleton James, who is returning to the private sector, according to the White House announcement. Von Dahm, formerly Reagan's secretary, has worked with him since his first campaign for governor of California in 1966. She is now deputy assistant to the president and director of presidential personnel. The president also announced that he will nominate Edward A. Curran, 48, until recently an official in the education department, to be deputy director of the Peace Corps. So, August 82, Helena Von Dahm gets her big promotion, becomes the head of presidential personnel, assistant to the president for presidential personnel. Again, I think we erroneously first read this at one point as being his personnel, his personal secretary, but in fact she was the person who put together the list of people to be promoted according to out of the White House. A very significant list and a very significant duty for a woman who had been is connected into this case in some other interesting ways.
And again, she says she knew him socially. That doesn't say whether they met once at a party or whether they were the most intimate of friends for a period of time. It is significant, however, that she worked for and was associated with TCI. In turn, von Bolschfing, a key Galen agent and, according to one source, head of Great Galen's North American operation after Galen went back to head up the BND, and, significantly, a man who owned, or was the president, rather, of TCI, one of whose subsidiaries, International Imaging Systems, was purchased by Albert Hakim and led directly into Stanford Technology. Stanford Technology being the firm that was used by Turple and Wilson in part of their Libyan operations, specifically to sell a computer system to Gaddafi. Now, recall that in Radio Free America number 3, and again in Radio Free America number 22, we took a look at the Galen antecedents to the Mideast terror connections. Specifically, we took a look at the Otto Skorzeny Nazi war criminal contingent that was recruited by Alan Dulles and the CIA to help put together first the Egyptian and later the Libyan secret service. We also took a look at Skorzeny's association with Muammar Gaddafi in the Paladin Mercenary Group, a key element of the Internationale Fascista, and an organization which includes KORU, as we're going to look at in our next program on this series. We also took a look at the fact that the first Palestinian terrorist groups were put together by Otto Skorzeny during the course of this mission in that part of the world. And again, Radio Free America is number 3, and in particular RFA number 22 are very important programs to tie in with this. So when we look at Turple and Wilson associated with Gaddafi, when we look at Turple Wilson associated with terrorism in the Middle East and elsewhere, we want to be thinking about these Galen antecedents to this. And again, bear in mind the name International Imaging Systems, or IIS for short. That was originally part of TCI, owned by or headed up by Otto von Bolschfing. It then was a transition point from TCI to Stanford Technology, the Hakim firm, Hakim, a Turple Wilson associate, who employed Frank Turple when he, along with Edwin Wilson, sold a computer system to Gaddafi. Another interesting detail about not only the International Imaging Systems connection, but also an allegation concerning a connection between Helena von Dahm and Albert Hakim is contained in the San Jose Metro. That's an excellent and up-and-coming publication here in the South Bay. This is from the San Jose Metro's issue of December 11th through December 17th of 1986. Another firm, the Silicon Valley, this is talking about the companies that Albert Hakim owned. Another firm, the Silicon Valley-based International Imaging Systems, was purchased by Hakim's Stanford Technology Corporation from Trans International Computer Investment Corp., a Sacramento firm with Silicon Valley subsidiaries. IIS manufactured systems that enhanced photographs of Earth taken by high-altitude spy satellites, the type that the intelligence community likes to boast can read the headlines off a copy of Pravda in Red Square. Its former parent company, TCI, had as its president one Otto Albrecht Alfred von Bolschwing, who in 1981 admitted to being a former Nazi Party and SS member during a Justice Department investigation. The same year, Justice began deportation proceedings on charges that he lied about his Nazi past to obtain U.S. citizenship in 1959. Von Bolschwing died a short time later. Von Bolschwing was an anti-Semitic propagandist in the SS who also headed the Nazi program to Aryanize, unquote, Jewish-owned properties. He informed for the Nazi Foreign Intelligence Service and developed a relationship with U.S. Army intelligence after the war, immigrating to America with the government's apparent blessing. Later, the company von Bolschwing headed conducted classified research for the Department of Defense. A minor investor in and translator for von Bolschwing's TCI was Helena von Damm, President Reagan's Austrian-born former deputy assistant. She invested $1,000 in the company while she was then Governor Reagan's secretary in Sacramento. And the next part is the most important here. One source who worked closely with Hakim told Metro that von Damm performed work for and visited European subsidiaries of Hakim-controlled companies. Von Damm later became U.S. ambassador to Austria, a position she no longer holds. It'll be interesting to see what, if anything, can be found about those particular connections. And again, Helena von Damm was special assistant. What was the title there?
She was presidential assistant for presidential personnel.
White House personnel.
Yeah.
The point is that she drew up the lists of appointments from which Ronald Reagan made potential appointees from which Ronald Reagan made his presidential appointments. A key person in the formation of the fabric of the Reagan administration, one associated apparently with von Bolschwing, and, definitely with von Bolschwing, and quite possibly with Hakim also. And again, if this seems a little off the track, we're trying to point out how central the Triple Wilson team is to the Reagan administration as a whole, and we're trying to point out the ongoing links between the Nazi origins and the Nazi connections and the Galen connections to much of Middle Eastern terror, and the people who eventually picked up the Skorzeny standard, the Edwin Wilsons and the others who helped train Skorzeny associate and protege Muammar Gaddafi.
With that, we are going to take another musical break and give you a chance to absorb all this lighthearted information. And when we come back, we will have more interesting stuff to talk about. We still have a whole lot more. The Triple Wilson team et al. Have still yet to make their final curtain call tonight. So don't go away. As we mentioned, a musical break for a few minutes, and then we'll be... have returned. This is Nip Tuck with Dave Emery in the studios at KFJC, back for the final segment. They don't quite divide up evenly, but this is the final home stretch of tonight's Radio Free America, number two in our series on Iran-Contragate. As it turns out now, number two of four, originally thought to be number two of three, because the original delineation of one on drugs, one on terror, and one on the cover-up is at this point become one on drugs, two on terror, and one on the cover-up. And we'll see if we can keep the ante down to one on the cover-up. So anyway, we have been talking most recently, for those of you who are just tuned in part way, we have been talking about the fact that the Triple Wilson team that we had been talking, that we've been talking about on this broadcast since way back in the early 80s and maybe even in the late 70s, I don't know when we first brought them up, is a key component, probably the key component of the entire Iran-Contragate mess, and that the variety of connections between not only the Triple Wilson people and the Iran-Contragate scam itself, the drugs, the guns, and all that, but between that group and the White House, as we just touched on with the connections between Albert Hakim and Helena von Damm, and Helena von Damm's connection as assistant to the president for presidential personnel, later as ambassador to Austria. We also talked about the fact that Helena von Dahm herself connects to Reinhard Galen's American chieftain, a man by the name of Otto von Bolschwing, who himself also connects through his company International Imaging Systems to Albert Hakim, a key player in the Iran-Contragate affair and also a local, as Otto von Bolschwing was for many years.
Also a key player in the Turple-Wilson team even before the Iran-Contra scandal, as we looked at and we're going to look at again here in just a second. The Stanford Technology Company was used by Turple and Wilson to in part of their Libyan operation.
Indeed. Now, we're going to continue to look a little bit more into this tangle of events, and believe us, folks, it is tangled. We're doing the best we can to present this in clear and comprehensible form, but these people are, for one thing, these groups are so interconnected and have been connected together for so long in so many ways. We talked about Theodore Shackley and Thomas Kleins, who first got together apparently at the JM Wave CIA station in Miami dealing with Cuban affairs.
And their association along with Edwin Wilson in the Bay of Pigs operation.
That's right. Then continuing on to Laos, where their association with Ed Wilson also continued, and their involvement on the fringes of the Vietnam War, and involved there with the heroin trade. We talked last week about Vang Pao, a Laotian heroin trafficker and warlord who had been a key part of this drug network that later connected up with the Nugenhan Bank and the Australian intelligence bank that was being used by many of the Task Force 157 people, another group that Wilson was a key member of, for laundering drug money and illicit arms money and for funding things like the attempt by the CIA, well, that is a successful attempt by the CIA to overthrow the Labor government of Gough Whitlam in Australia because of some key CIA installations they felt were imperiled by the Whitlam government, and all kinds of things. This group has been together for a long time in a variety of places. This is not a bunch of people that Ollie North called up and said, hey, you guys are good patriots. Why don't we do something to help those poor Contras? These are groups that have been essentially scamming on behalf of fascism for close to 30 years now, and they have not changed a whit, and it's only that certain aspects are now being examined in the national media for the first time. They previously ran this number down with the Ed Wilson trial, but Ed Wilson was painted as a lone, desperate, rogue ex-CIA agent, and they managed to put him away for 50 years in Texas, while the rest, Secord, Klein, Shackley, et al., went free, despite being called as witnesses at Wilson's trial. Now the picture is beginning to come out, again, in the national media. Followers of Mae Brussels' broadcasts and people who have been listening to Dave and myself for a few years know that none of this stuff is news. None of this is even particularly hard to find out about if you read the newspapers and read books. But so what we're trying to do tonight, again, is to put some of this this spine of the Turple-Wilson terrorist network, among others, into the proper position it holds in the Contragate and Irangate scam. Now, we're going to talk a little bit more about Albert Hakim, again, as Dave mentioned, a longtime player in the Wilson-Turple network, and more recently revealed as a key man in the Iran arms shipments and the Contra supply network. This article is from the San Jose Mercury News for Thursday morning, December 4th of 1986. The headline is Poindexter Refuses Senate Testimony, but the more important, the subhead for our purposes is Investigation Focusing on Los Gatos Arms Dealer. The article is by Carl M. Cannon and Pete Carey of the Mercury News Washington Bureau, Dateline Washington. Albert Hakim, an Iranian-born financial wizard from Los Gatos, has drawn the attention of U.S. officials investigating how profits from secret U.S. arms sales to Iran were diverted to Nicaraguan rebels, according to knowledgeable sources. One former military officer close to Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, who was fired by President Reagan last week for his part in the diversion of Iranian arms money to the Contras, confirmed that Hakim has become a focus of the investigation. Quote, "Yeah, I heard that. It's true," said the former officer. "I wouldn't use the word mastermind, but Hakim would be a party to it. That's what they want to know about," unquote. The Los Angeles Times characterized Hakim in an article published in today's editions as the, quote, suspected financial mastermind, unquote, of the secret operation to aid the Contras, and said sources in the House and Senate Intelligence Committees and the FBI say they have begun questioning administration officials about Hakim. Quote, "If you want to get to the bottom of Irangate, you have to start with Hakim," one former intelligence officer said Wednesday. "If I were a reporter, I would head for Los Gatos. In a month, all you'll read about is Hakim and Secord," unquote. 1983, Hakim joined forces with retired Air Force General Richard Secord, widely identified as the architect of efforts to arm the Nicaraguan rebels. That year, they founded a firm in San Jose called Stanford Technology Trading Group, Inc., which is now located in the Virginia suburbs. According to published accounts,